everyone, and welcome to this Fun Music Company virtual seminar on the subject of how to make choir rehearsals fun. Here at the Fun Music Company recently, we've been busy compiling a brand new product called Fun Warm-Ups for Choir. And while we were compiling this project, we came across a very passionate expert choir trainer who I'd like to introduce to you today. This person is a very special lady. She has over 30 years' experience of teaching choirs of all ages. She's taught in schools, churches, community groups with adults and kids, and she really knows this topic, which you're about to experience firsthand. Her name is Carol Troutman Wiggins, and she comes from Belmont, North Carolina. What really impresses me about Carol, and this is why I've asked her to come and chat with me today, is that when we decided here at the Fun Music Company to compile a collection of choir warm-ups, Carol submitted not one or two of her best ideas, but at least 40 or 50 of her best warm-up songs, each with their own character, flavour and actions, which all have a specific place and purpose in choir training. It was really enough for a whole book on its own. So today I'm here to pick her brain, so to speak, and find out from her 30 plus years of tips and tricks on what to do when you're standing in front of a choir to make choir rehearsals productive, musically fulfilling, and most of all, fun. So what we've done is distilled Carol's ideas down to 10 tips for making choir rehearsals fun, which you can download as a PDF document below this interview. So print out these notes and follow along as we talk through the ideas. It will jog your thoughts and you'll be able to think about which ideas are suitable for you in your teaching situation. Look, firstly, I wanted to just really thank you today, Carol, for doing this chat with me. And I wanted to thank you for the amazing amount of warm-up songs that you've contributed to the choir warm-ups book that we've recently all been working on together. It's looking exciting.
It is. I was excited working on it for you. I did those in about 2 weeks, just constant. One just kept coming right after another.
Yes.
And it was really a fun thing to work on.
Oh, fantastic. Well, I tell you what, when it comes to choir training, and this is why we've found it really important to talk to you today, from the warm-up songs that you've presented in the ebook, the many, many warm-up songs that we really didn't expect with the book, you seem to know every trick there is to motivate your choirs and what makes them, and really that makes you uniquely qualified to be the person that I'm talking to you right now about choir warm-ups and how to present them to your groups. I have to say that I'm really looking forward to unveiling the secrets and ideas that you've accumulated. Now, I think, is your career about 30 years?
Yeah, I started when I was right out of college, which was 1980.
Yes.
I had my first choir actually when I was in college, and that was an adult choir. Didn't have any idea of what I was doing, but
yes.
You know, you learn over the years what works and what doesn't work.
Yes, yes. And so this is going to be fantastic for the teachers listening out today, because they can tap into your 30 years of experience, and you've done, I mean, major study in choir too, from what I've just checked out a little bit here and there about what you've done, but it seems like you've done study previously in choir training as well.
Yes, I've done that in sacred music also.
Fantastic. So as a choir trainer in this one session, they'll be able to tap into your 30 years and all that training and share with music teachers everywhere. So it is very exciting to get together with you today, Carol, and thank you.
Well, thank you for asking.
Let me start off by asking a very obvious but important question, which is, just why is it important to have a fun choir rehearsal?
Well, a dear friend who taught me how to cook, her name was Eva, she was in one of the songs about the little lady who snorted when she sang, or whenever she, not sang, but when she laughed.
Yes.
She was a magnificent cook.
Right.
And I asked, what was her secret to that? And she said, well, I use canned and boxed items just like everybody else, but she always added something special of her own to whatever item it was, so that it was different from everybody else's. And people always complimented her on her food and kept coming back for more. And she never, they never really knew what her real secret was, which was just to add something to it, anything that would go along with it. And that's what I'm trying to do with the music and with the warm-ups. If it starts to get stale a little bit, or you don't know exactly what to do, just add something, add a hat, add a costume, just add one little word or something to it just to make it a little bit different.
Mm.
You also want something that the choir members are going to remember, and you want them to keep coming back for more. Mm. They should be involved in this learning process rather than just sitting on the sidelines. And so that's why I like to have a lot of involvement with movement and costumes and just different little things that make what we do just a little bit different. Mm. And that's going to enhance their learning and their enthusiasm.
Mm.
And if it's drudgery, they're going to hate it and not want to do it. So we have to do something to keep it exciting.
Mm. So, and also you're not just creating a choir rehearsal, but you're creating a memory by the sounds too.
Right. Right, something for them to remember and something for them to crave and want to come back and do more because it's different.
Yes, yeah. Look, I understand that today some people listening to us, Carol, will be brand new choir trainers without the experience that you've got. Carol, could you just briefly run through for the new choir trainers out there what the importance and advantages of warming up a choir is as opposed to just jumping into the songs that they're working on?
Well, as most choir trainers know, normally the voice is not usually ready to jump right into a song, especially if the song has really low notes or really high notes. You can damage your vocal cords if you're not properly warmed up, and a lot of people don't really understand that.
Mm.
And your voice will become tired very quickly. But just like an Olympic athlete warms up for a race or a training event, so should a singer or a group of singers warm up always before singing.
Mm.
For instance, if a runner takes off running without stretching his muscles, he's going to get a sprain or a tear in that muscle. When you warm up, that makes the group perform better. It enhances their singing range and can make it a lot of fun for them. It keeps them enthused about coming to choir before, therefore helping them to enjoy the music. Consistent daily warm-ups develop and keep the voice in shape. And I consider them to be more important on a regular basis than the song itself. You have to keep going with your warm-ups.
Yes, and you're saying just as a runner would not just jump into a running race, you have to warm up for it, and you know, you wouldn't expect your body to be able to do that, so why should we expect our voices to do that? Is that what you're saying?
Right, because the voice is also like a muscle. You have to work it, you have to train it, and that's the only way you can get excellent results from your voice, by taking care of it and training, just like an athlete.
So it's paramount, really, to working with any group and choir. You wouldn't run in all your 30 years of experience. You wouldn't run a choir rehearsal without doing warm ups. Is that right, Carol?
Only if I had to, for time's sake.
Yes,
but only in case of emergency. But on a regular warm up, never. Always do warm ups.
Yes, and just to jump into the things that make choir work fun. What would be your advice on creating a fun environment for choirs to work in, Carol? Perhaps could you go through and think of your top 5 to 10 tips of creating a fun working environment for choirs? For example, it's not just what you do with the choirs, is it? Or is it a bit more at a fundamental level than that? Is it about the atmosphere that you create in the room before you start even talking, before you even start the rehearsal?
Oh, yeah, I believe that you must have a fun environment. But it doesn't necessarily have to be anything with what's in the room. It has to start with me.
Yes.
If I'm fun, then they will have fun.
Yes.
If I'm depressed and grouchy, that's going to cause a negative outcome. And what fun is that when you're having a choir? You have to be an actor or an actress. You have to be pleasant and fun at all times, no matter what you're going through. Because if I'm enthusiastic or if you're enthusiastic, the choir is going to mirror that, because they are a mirror of you.
Mm. It really seems like common sense, doesn't it? But it's so true.
It does. The same thing if you're teaching a class in school. You know, the kids are going to be in a bad mood if you're in a bad mood. People and children today need such an escape from the pressures of school and jobs and family problems. And as trainers, we need to create an adventure in everything they do, even the warm-ups. With fun warm-ups, you can visit different countries. You can go back in time. You can go to outer space. You can go to a land of make-believe with any of the songs that you sing. They learn that they can create sounds with their voices that they've never noticed that they can do before.
Mm.
And if I can make someone smile or bring someone pleasure through music, even for a minute, then I've made a difference for that 1 minute.
Mm.
And even adults are not above doing things like this, because the times I've tried these things that I know work with adults, I've been really surprised at the excellent response I've had. But at the same time, while they're doing all this, they are receiving all this intense vocal training, and they don't even realize it. So that's what makes it fun for them.
Mm. So they don't realize, but you know that you're putting all those technical sides to it in, and making them actually learn without them realizing.
Right, and the atmosphere is crucial, whether it's with a paint job to the room, you know, by adding the colorful walls or the curtains, or just the big smile on your face. And people love to be surrounded by beauty and creativity, whether it's in the room or whether it's around the spirit of the director.
Yes.
And you notice how much better a hamburger tastes in a fancy restaurant and with candles and soft music. And that's just the atmosphere. It's the same hamburger. Or how much better that hamburger tastes if you're having dinner with the people that you love. And that's also the atmosphere. It's not the burger.
Mm.
So it's the same thing with music and atmosphere in the room. So it can be either you or it can be something in the surroundings.
So, Carol, you're saying this is your first tip to setting up an amazing fun experience in your choir rehearsals is to create the music room, and it starts with you.
Yes, it does. Yes. I have to adjust my attitude and make them think that, you know, this is going to be wonderful because I love it. And if I love it, you're going to love it.
Okay, what are some specific tips to perhaps starting with you and creating the music room? There's some mentions of colours and smells and things like that. What sort of things do you do in your choir rehearsal rooms to make the kids just feel creative and feel ready?
The first thing I always do, if possible, is the paint job to the room. We do
yes.
the colours of light blue and green because those are known to enhance creativity.
Mm.
And that's if it's all possible to paint the room, that's what we do.
So it's light blue and green, Carol, is it?
That's what I've heard. That's what I've done some research on.
Yes.
And it seems to be a calming color, but both colors are calming, and they're supposed to enhance the creativity.
Yes.
And it seems to have worked every time I've used it. It's just like yellow enhances agitation, and red enhances different things that are not good. But the light blue and the greens are supposed to be the creative colors.
Amazing, isn't it? And just something small like that can make a huge difference. What other sort of things? Smells? Are they?
Smells are very important. I don't know if you all have those plug-in air fresheners there, but if you have the air fresheners that you can plug into the wall or that have the oil that changes the smell of the room, if you change the smell every week, this is going to make them wonder and keep... it's going to awaken their senses, first of all.
Mm.
And they're not going to know what smell they're going to have the next time.
Mm.
So, for Christmas, you can use, cinnamon and apples and sugar plums and evergreen smells, and then springtime, flower scents, and autumn, pumpkin spices, and winter, peppermint and sugar cookies. But if you keep changing the smells of the room, that's going to make something else interesting. That's going to awaken another sense for them.
Mm-hmm. How about the visual aspects of the room, Carol? What do you do to make the room come alive visually?
The first thing I do is try to fill the room with musical instruments of all kinds. It's important that the instruments can be touched and looked at. It's like some instruments can't be touched if they're too fragile. And I just hang those on the wall. I hang the entire instrument on the wall. If there are fragile instruments, they can be handled with supervision. But I invest in the instruments that are okay to be handled, like a clarinet or flute or guitar, just so they can have some hands-on experiences with them.
Sure.
If you ask around for old instruments, there will always be somebody who can donate one or has one laying around that they can just touch. But just make sure you keep hand sanitizer and instrument sanitizer available just to be on the safe side.
Sure. And you seem, with what you've written in the Choir Warm-Ups book, you seem to be a great props user. Do you have any... How do you keep them in the room, and where do you put them?
Well, the first thing I did was invest in a piece of pegboard, which is the board that has the holes in it, and it has the hooks. So you mount that on the wall, and anything you can hang on that board, you hang on the board because it's a bit, another visual, and it's something to attract their attention,
yes,
and keep them interested, and they're going to wonder, well, how does that work? What do you do with that? Mm. And can I touch that? And I do that. I have the drawers that have the wheels on the bottom, the little bins that you pull the drawers out, but they're kind of see-through, so you can see them in there. Like the ribbon sticks are all in one of the drawers. And right. Since they're different colors, they can see that.
Mm.
And it's another thing with colors. You can purchase those kind of things from Oriental Trading Company or Windy City Novelty or Rhode Island Novelty. If you just Google any kind of novelty company, all these companies will come up.
Mm.
If you don't want to purchase something, if you have no budget, you can do handmade props out of cardboard that can be just as effective.
Right, yeah. And how about other things like posters and things to look at on the walls?
Posters are wonderful. You can get posters from eBay, Amazon. There are plenty of poster websites like posters.com and allposters and art.com. But also the music companies such as Music in Motion, Friendship House, The Music Stand, West Music, and even eBay and Amazon are full of posters for, you know, a very little size. So it's a very nice addition to your wall for not a lot of cost.
Mm. And do you think do you feel that it adds, do the choir members always talk about them? Is it important?
Yeah, because sometimes the posters are inspirational. They might have a quote on there about music or practicing, or you might have the composers up there and they ask, who is that? And that's an opportunity to let them know who that is and what kind of music they did. Or it might be a musical instrument. And they say, oh, we've got one of those over there.
Mm.
So, yeah, but they're always a topic of conversation if you have some kind of poster on the wall.
Mm. 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 And how about things to help with the technical side of singing? You know, are there things around the room that you place to help with the technical issues of singing, things that they can see themselves in and do, the mirrors and things like that? Do you place them heavily around the room, or how do you use them?
Well, since I came from a dancing school background, we always had the big wall mirrors. You know, one wall was a solid mirror.
Yes.
If that's in your budget, that's the best way to go because you can see the whole body that way. You can see your mouth, you can see your posture, you can see how you're sitting or how you're standing. If that's not in your budget to do a big wall mirror, you can get the little $10 long door mirrors and put them side by side. It's a decorative thing also, and you can still see yourself in that. But it helps to see yourself when your mouth is actually forming the vowel sounds, to see if you're breathing correctly, if your diaphragm is in and out correctly, and that your shoulders are down and your chin is up. And also, if you're doing a performance, you can see what the performance will look like. You can see if you're smiling or sad, or you can also create space. It makes makes the room look bigger.
Mm.
But the thing you might have to do is put some little sheer curtains, put a string across the top.
Okay.
And so you can shut the curtain and, you know, not have they're always class clowns is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, that's a very interesting bit of advice, because it's something that I wouldn't have necessarily known, not being a choir trainer. And it's very sound advice to put the sheer curtain on the front, isn't it? How does it help you to put that in front?
I'm sorry, tell me again.
How does it help you to put the sheer curtain in front?
What you can do, as you know, whenever you're forming your vowel sounds and doing your breathing, your body creates a muscle memory, so you know what it feels like when your mouth is in a certain position.
Mm.
If you can see it first, then you'll know what it feels like. Mm. And then you're going to remember the next time, oh, that doesn't feel right, so I'll look at myself to see if that looks like what it feels like.
Mm. And so then you can close the curtain when they don't need to concentrate on those, but open it up when you need to work on it. Is that right?
Right, because sometimes you have that one child, well, more than one child or person,
yeah,
that really likes to look at themselves, because when they start to get in, you know, fifth, sixth grade, they're aware of the way they look, and they like to brush their hair and,
yes,
you know, look at themselves and see if their makeup is right. And so, you know, when that happens, you just close a little sheer curtain, and that way you don't have to speak to them about that. It's just the curtain is closed and the problem is solved.
Yes. Well, so far, Carol, we've talked about setting up the music room, the choir training room, ready for rehearsal. Shall we get into the next tip? What would be your second tip of making a fun choir rehearsal?
I take pictures of everything and everybody. Mm. People love to see themselves in the pictures. They love to see themselves performing and rehearsing. I've even designated a choir photographer, and they take all they do is come to the group and take pictures of something that's going on at the time. Sometimes they pose the children or the adults even. They can make funny faces or they can just have a beautiful picture of themselves. Then after you get all the pictures together, if you have the technology, put it on a PowerPoint and show a slideshow. You can do that of every performance at the next meeting. Show the performance so you can see what it looked like. I always do it whenever we start rehearsing, and then at the end of rehearsing, I'm talking about the whole rehearsal. Like if it's 6 weeks, I'll start at the beginning and keep taking them at the end.
Yep.
And people love to see themselves in costumes and love to see the scenery and makeup and all the props that they use. They love to see themselves at parties and social events that you might have.
Fantastic, yes. And so you get all the different sides of the members. You get the funny faces. You get the fun posture. The all sorts of stuff.
Right.
And
they like that.
And do you do choir? Do you do like slideshows very often?
It depends on what's going on at the time. If we're doing if I'm working in a church and we're doing something on the Sunday morning and they do a performance then, yes, I take pictures of that. Then if anybody is doing a musical or a musical drama, we take pictures of that.
But we
do it just whenever something is going on or every now and then a random something.
Mm.
It's when they're posted. They're taken all the time, but we post them just at random times. But mainly after performances.
And how do you do all this, Carol? I mean, you're conducting the choir, you're organizing the choir members, you're doing all these, you know, things for, you're thinking ahead for what you need to have coming up. Do you do all the photos yourself, or do you designate someone to do that?
Someone else usually takes the pictures, but I'm the one that puts it on the PowerPoint because I can know how to crop it. There are some people that do not want their pictures on Facebook and different things like that, so I have to know who to crop out and who to, if somebody doesn't want theirs in there because of the way they look or their hair is bad, you know, we have to take that into consideration too.
Mm.
But adults are mostly are more likely to want their pictures taken out than the kids are. Kids love it.
Mm. Well, this is really interesting so far, Carol, because not once have we talked about any technical sides of singing or anything like that. We're talking about the whole setup of the room here. We're talking about, you know, creating this fun atmosphere is so important. Things you can do to get your choir members enthused before you even start to say too much, isn't it?
Right.
So what would be your third tip to getting a really fun, successful choir rehearsal or performance going with your choir members?
The next thing I would do is to, whatever song we're doing, add some kind of choreography or hand motions to it.
Mm-hmm.
The most simple motion will make a song interesting because it turns the song into a visual experience instead of just a song.
Mm-hmm.
That's that one little special thing that's added. Even if it's just holding your hand up, or if you're singing the word love, if you draw a heart in the air with your fingers, or if you take your hands and put them up to your chest, right where your heart's at, you can use sign language. You can clap your hands. You can do motions with your feet. Just simple little things that you add will make a song a little bit more interesting.
Mm. And adding the kinesthetic side and the visual side of it to the auditory side really makes a complete picture, doesn't it?
Right, because singing is not just what comes out of your mouth. It's your whole body. It's your mind. It's your soul.
Mm.
It has to include all of that to make a complete rehearsal and a complete musician also at the same time. You have to be aware of all these things.
Mm. Now, Carol, I've seen in your choir warm-ups, and there are so many that just have so much involved them, and it's not, it's, as you said, it's not just the singing that makes it interesting, it's other things that come into the song which gives it that little flair, and something that we really loved about your choir warm-ups that you've written for us. You are a great props user, and I'd love to talk to you about how you use props in your songs. How do you keep it controlled, but you still get it fun? How do you use them?
Okay, first of all, your best resource for any kind of prop that you're looking for is one of the novelty catalogs. I use Oriental Trading most of all.
Right.
If they don't have what you want, they can give you so many ideas. Anytime I look through an Oriental Trading catalog, I just get excited. Oh, I can do this with this song, or I can add this hat to this song, or,
right,
you know, that's what happens. But these novelty catalogs include toys and hats and simple jewelry, costuming, wigs, and you can get them in bulk for very inexpensive. They're very inexpensive. You can get inflatables like guitars and saxophones and microphones. But you can get all kinds of things that just with hundreds of ideas.
Can you
a lot of the things I use are the props.
Can you
I mean, I'm sorry, are the hats.
Yes.
Because a hat can create anything, no matter what you have on. If you have on your simple white T-shirt and your blue jeans, you can just add a hat to it, and all of a sudden you have an instant costume. And the kids don't have to spend a lot of money, or the parents, because I've worked a lot with the underprivileged children, and they don't have the funds to do that kind of thing with. But they all have blue jeans and a white T-shirt.
Fantastic. So you're saying that anything you have with blue jeans and a white T-shirt, you can dress up or make something out of.
Right.
I mean, I've seen a few things that you've done. You can make anything from pirate costumes to, I mean, this is something that we could talk about later on as well, but, you know, how do you dress up a T-shirt and blue jeans?
Well, you can, Oriental Trading has the paper pirate hats. So say they're going to be a pirate. So you get the pirate hat, you get a piece of cloth and make a sash for their belt, add a sword and a black eye patch, and you've got a pirate.
Fantastic.
So it costs less than $5.
Less than $5.
To do that, yeah.
Yes, yeah. And
anybody can have a piece of material that you can just cut. It doesn't have to be sewn on the ends because it's just an illusion. If people will just remember from a distance, a costume is just an illusion. It doesn't matter if it's perfect or sewn perfectly or trimmed on the edges, because nobody's going to see that.
And look, what else? What other kinds of props do you use to make your choir rehearsals fun?
Well, the most fun they've had recently is we purchased from Oriental Trading once again.
Yes.
One of their parachutes. They have parachutes in two or three different sizes. They have a small one, but if you have low ceilings, that's great to work with. If you're going to use it outside or in the gym, they have a larger one like that. You can play all kinds of games with parachutes. You can play a high and low game.
Right.
If you're playing a song, if you play the music, but as soon as you know the notes are going high, you raise the parachute up.
Right, yes.
Let it lower for the lower notes.
Oh, fantastic. Okay,
you
yes.
Can, if you know the song is going to go upscale, you can go to the right. You can move to the right, and it turns like a big record. If you walk to the left, if the scale's going down, still you're going up and down the scale.
Yes.
If you have trills or intervals of seconds, you can make little tiny waves with it. Like the da-da-da-da-da kind of sound.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. What a good visual way of doing it.
You can change places. You can count. You can number the children like 1, 2, 3, 4. The ones will switch places on count 7. So we'll put the parachute up and count to 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, switch. And all of a sudden they'll switch.
Right.
This way they learn to count and to do something on that particular count. But you can choose any of the counts, and it gets harder, like if you're switching on counts 1, 2, switch. That makes it harder, and it makes them really think about it. You can put a ball on the top of it and make tiny waves and count 1, 2, 3, and then pop it up on count 4.
Ah, yes.
So there are all kinds of things you can do with something as silly as a parachute.
So when you're doing that last thing you mentioned where you're counting and you're flicking the thing on the parachute up, do you... Do you do that to music, or is that? Do you put?
Yes, we do it to music. Well, we practice it first without the music.
Yes.
Just to get the count. We start off very slow. We count like 1, 2, 3, pop.
Right.
And then whenever we get a little bit faster, and then we add it to the music.
Right.
And then, you know, you can't always do it consistently because the ball always goes somewhere. You have to take time to get it back. But as soon as you regroup, you just start over again.
And Carol, are these ideas just for younger choirs, or do you use this for all age levels?
Anything you can do with a child, you can do it with an adult. And surprisingly enough, they love it.
Mm. So you would say they get just as much value out of this as what a child's choir would?
Yes, I have pictures of them. I think in one of these things I talk about, the balloon between the legs.
Yes.
I've got pictures of that, the adults and them, you know, having a blast, doing silly things.
So how do you use the balloons between the legs to warm up choir?
Well, what you do is you put the balloons through between your legs, but at your knees.
Yes.
And you walk around or run around as much as you can. And at the same time, you're trying to concentrate.
Yes.
You have to concentrate on what you're singing. You have to be singing at the same time. But as long as you're singing and you have the ball between your knees, it's a distraction. And that makes you concentrate more on what you're singing with the ball in between your knees.
Right.
And so that's trying to train your mind also. Like, if you're singing in a performance and somebody gets up and walks out, the first thing you're going to do is watch them.
Right.
And you might lose your train of thought. But this trains your mind to keep your mind on your singing and not technically on the ball between your knees.
Brilliant. And you've got I know that you've written a couple of choir warm-ups specifically for the ebook that you've compiled with us. And there are some choir warm-ups with the balloons doing that particular activity, isn't it?
Right.
Yes, so that's going to be great value. And it's such a brilliant way of thinking about it. I mean, many wouldn't think of doing that.
But whenever you see somebody not thinking about what they're doing and you realize that singing has to have such focus, but you can't be over-focused.
Mm.
But if you train your mind to have a happy medium in that area, then you're not as bothered by distractions because you know how to overcome it.
Mm. How about using balls and pom-poms, Carol?
Oh, I've used the pom-poms here recently with something, and even used them with the boys.
Yes.
I was a little reluctant at first because I thought, what are the boys going to think in this particular thing? It was about a spring picnic, and they were cheering because they were happy about being at the spring picnic and the family coming. But I decided to get the metallic pom-poms.
Yes.
And they got to, when they come, they come in this long, stringy-looking thing.
Right.
And you have to scrunch them up. And so they were having fun scrunching the pom-poms and getting them up. And they also came in black.
Right. So fantastic. Okay.
The boys went straight for the black pom-poms.
Yes.
They didn't get the purples or the pinks and the greens, of course. They got the black.
Yes.
So they were happy with that. And, you know, here in the U.S., I don't know how you do there, but male cheerleaders are the big thing in the universities now.
Yes.
And they're not the girly kind of cheerleaders. They're athletes. They're, you know, they've really worked out, and they're gymnasts. And they do some very hard physical and athletic things.
Oh, great. So
that's the way I put it to the boys. And you know, they thought they were a lot of fun, and they didn't have one qualm about using them. I had never heard a complaint. They wanted to take them home with them. So at the end of the program, when it was over, I said, okay, you can keep your pom-poms. And they were thrilled.
Mm.
I said, okay, well, that's great.
So it sounds like the model is set over there in the sporting activities in the U.S., and so the boys take on to that. Do you show them videos as well?
I do. Not usually, but sometimes whenever. Well, I lose my voice an awful lot from talking, as usual.
Yes.
And I do show them videos. And DVDs during that time, which is usually a singing DVD that has motions, or it might be, I don't know if you ever heard of Sharon Lois and Graham.
No.
They're a little bit way back, about 20 years ago, but I still have their videos, and they have some great songs. I'll show something like that, or VeggieTales, or something that encourages music and motion.
Right, yes. And what was that one that you said, Carol, the one from 20 years back?
There was a group, they're from Canada, and they were called Sharon, Lois, and Bram.
Right.
And they were like folk singers that did nothing but give concerts of children's songs.
Right.
And they were wonderful. My kids grew up with them, and, you know, we still have their tapes and play them in the car, you know, once in a while. But some of their things are still around, and very good singers and good ideas.
Great. So that's Sharon, Lewis, and Graham.
No, it's Sharon, Lois, L-O-I-S.
Lois.
Graham, B-R-A-M.
B-R-A-M. Mm-hmm. Oh, fantastic. Something for everyone to look out for then, Carol, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And how about things like, I mean, you were saying earlier that you get props in a prop box like the ribbon wands and things like that. How do you use ribbon wands?
Ribbon wands are wonderful. Mm. I have a love-hate relationship with ribbon wands.
What do you love about them and what do you hate about them?
They're beautiful. They're fun to do because you can do circles with them. You can do them over your head. You know, they're 9 feet long and you can do figure eights and you can turn around in circles with them. But they tangle up. Mm. They're terrible about getting tangled up around the children, around their feet. And so you can't play around when you have ribbon wands. You have to do it right or don't do it.
Mm. Yes.
We're doing a thing right now on how to tame your tongue, because what they're trying to do is just watch what you say. It's what the song is about. And I'm using the red and gold streamers on the ribbon wands. And that, whenever they're doing the figures eights and the circles, that's the fire of the tongue. You know, it's a dangerous thing. And then we have this little tongue come out in the costume, and this little tongue costume runs in between the fire and flames, and he gets tangled in it sometimes too. But you know, we have to space them out a little bit more for that. But you can do all kinds of things with those things, and you can like throw them forward and do a snake on the floor, and then pop them back over your shoulder and. They're just fantastic little things, but they're fragile and they break easily. So make sure if you order some of those, you don't just order one package; you order two because they are going to come apart.
Right.
And save one for your performance, but they're really worth the trouble, and they're really impressive. And you can do little routines with fast and crazy songs, or you can do them with slow and melodic songs for something really beautiful.
Sounds great. Well, let's move ahead a little bit here, Carol. There's some fantastic props. We could talk all day just on props, I think. It's just you've got so many ideas here to go with. And what we'll do is as we go ahead and now get ready to put this on the website, we'll go and write a little PDF document for everyone to look at as well, so they can see your absolute wealth of amazing ideas that you use with props to go along with choir rehearsals. Is that okay with you, Carol?
Sure, that's great.
Yes, yeah. Just a quick question before we do go on. When you're using all the balls and the balloons and the ribbons and the, you know, glow-in-the-dark ropes and the flags and the candles and inflatable microphones, how do you keep it fun but keep it controlled at the same time? What sort of things, you know, how do you not make it go out of hand?
The first thing you always have to do whenever you're dealing with something like this, and I learned the hard way, is that you have to establish the rules from the very beginning. They can only touch the props when I say they can, or on a certain count of the music, or on a certain word. They can hold it in their hands, but they either have to hold it in their hands or it has to be on the floor.
Right.
If they don't follow the rules, it has to be put away.
Mm.
And I'm very consistent about that, you know.
Yes.
And I'll only take it away for a minute. But
yes.
Then when they get it back, they follow the rules a little bit.
Mm.
But if I tell them to place the ball on the floor, pick it up on the word, say, obey. Like you're going, I'm going to obey. Pick up the ball right there.
Mm.
But everything is in rhythm. If any time they touch that ball or ping pong ball or whatever it is that's bound to go haywire, it has to be in some kind of rhythm with the music or practicing it with it.
Yes.
I keep the props in their hands doing something specific at all times. They're either bouncing a ball, they're throwing up and catching, or walking while I hold it in the center of their body, and I keep the prop busy the whole time, but it's all in rhythm with the song.
So as soon as they...
Now, at the very end, I'll say, okay, you do this, Right. At the end, I'll give you 1 minute of free time to do whatever you want to with your bomb.
Right.
And that works because I keep the stopwatch and I count the 1 minute. At the 1 minute, they sit down, they put the ball down, and I'll say, okay, Sean, go put your ball in the basket. And he'll get up, and I say, now you bounce it 3 times, shoot it in the basket, and come sit down. Mm-hmm. And so we take the time to do that, and it's organized, and they're doing something with it, and there's not usually a problem.
I think we're ready to move on, and talking about the actual rehearsal, keeping it active and varied while still teaching the technical concepts, such as breathing, you know, very basic concept, but very, very important, isn't it? And we hear about techniques like breath control or even singing the consonants in choral mentoring. But for those out there that would like to know, why do these techniques need to be taught, and how can you make learning this active and fun?
Well, singing and breathing go hand in hand. You can't sing without breathing. And singing is not just a mouth thing. It involves the entire body when done correctly, as we said before. It involves the emotions and the mind and the spirit. You have to breathe properly in order to vocalize even the slightest sustained word or note. Mm. You have to be able to have your breath coming out properly, or it's going to sound terrible. Breath support is vital in helping to produce that well-supported tone and to get a stable sound. It also teaches our diaphragm and abdominal muscles to withstand the greater tension and pressure to help you sing louder or softer or hold notes longer, or to sustain notes without running out of breath, or to sing staccatos and attack properly.
Mm-hmm. So
for the consonants, again, the muscle memory is how we properly form words to clearly and have words understood by your audience. When the fun is added to the technique, it's done with greater enthusiasm and intensity. You're allowing the muscles to develop, and they really don't know that, what's going on.
Fantastic. So what are sort of some of the basic things that you would do to get that breath control happening in your choirs?
When I feel like they're being a little lazy as far as their breathing, the first thing I'll do is have them walk around the room and sing whatever we're singing at the time. It might be the song or it might be the warm-up. Just that movement alone gets the energy going. It gets the blood flowing. Even with adult choirs. Now, a lot of adults can't do that, but they can walk a little bit. And any little bit of movement that you do with them increases the breath control and the breath support. It gets them breathing heavier, and it increases the serotonin in their brain, and it elevates their mood.
And other actions as well? Do you have other actions that you do with choirs? Is it just walking, or do you do other things as well?
No, we do other things. Like if they're doing warm-ups and they're doing a scale that goes all the way up, if when they get to the high note, I'll say, okay, now raise your hand. Raise your eyebrows if you're hitting a high note.
Yes.
Even if you raise your eyebrows, that's going to help you focus on that high note and keep it from going flat. That's my favorite one. Raise your hand, raise your eyebrows.
Yes, yeah, and you're right.
Go down to the lowest note. Yeah. Squat down if you can. Mm. Or either take your hand and lower it down. Because that way you feel it and you see the visual of the high note and the low note, and it raises your awareness of the tone.
Now, looking at your warm-ups, you've got so many funny songs and actions to go along. You've got so many funny sounds in your songs and so many actions to go along with the warm-ups. What sort of funny sounds do you use and you know, the actions to go along with it, perhaps? Just a couple of examples?
Well, we might use a frog sound because that helps you learn how to roll your R's and do your R sound. We might hop around on the floor like a frog. Usually adults don't do this one too well. But, you know, children really enjoy that. The elephant sound, when you're doing the elephant sound, helps warm up your lips whenever you're doing the sound.
Okay, so that's a lip warm-up.
Yeah, so yeah. All you have to do is take your arm and move it up and down just like an elephant trunk, and even adults will do that.
Yeah, that's so true, isn't it? And how about the frog? What does that do? What does that technically do?
That's the R sound, rolling the R's like the ribbit.
Yeah, okay, yes, yeah.
Yeah, we teach you how to do that.
Yeah, and a lot of people use laughing sounds.
I use laughing sounds all the time.
Do you?
Because The reason is because laughing sounds are great for your diaphragm control, because most people have different kind of laughs. They laugh from their belly, or they laugh from their diaphragm, or they laugh with their shoulders. But whenever you're doing all these different sounds, it helps you become familiar with the different areas in your mouth that can make us, because you can place the sound in several places in your mouth and your head. You can speak on the tip of your tongue and your teeth. You can sing way down in your chest, or you can sing in your throat, which you really shouldn't do. You can sing in your head with your head voice, or in the back of your throat. And if you really concentrate, you can put the voice right there at your ear and sing out your ear.
Wow.
It's really neat. It's kind of silly, but it's another one of those things where you're feeling where the sound actually is in your head.
Yeah, yeah. So you would just, how would you do that with a choir? How would you get them to sing out of their ear, for example?
Well, you would kind of just have to experiment with it. And because a lot of times singers do not get the concept of where to put the sound in your head. And sometimes that takes a longer time to understand.
Yes.
I know when I first started singing lessons, it took me a very long time to understand that, no, you don't put your sound here, but you put it here. And the teacher was taking my mouth and my cheeks and pushing my cheeks together, saying, no, the sound goes here.
Right.
And once you get that muscle memory, you go, okay.
So
by doing that, you're aware of the right and wrong places for that particular sound.
So it's very much a learned activity, that one, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
What are things like pinwheels to teach breath control with? I've heard of that term, but how do you use them in choir?
Well, what you do is, if you're teaching breath control, it's the same kind of exercise as blowing through a straw.
Okay.
Take a big, deep breath with your shoulders down. What I tell them to do is take a breath to fill up their armpits with air. And that way it keeps the shoulders down, and it makes the diaphragm expand. So whenever you blow through a straw and let it out easily, it controls that breath and to see how long you can do it. Now, if you use a pinwheel, which is something you can get from the novelty companies, it's on a stick, and it's a child's toy. It's a wheel made of paper or plastic curls, and it's on the axle with a pin.
Right.
And when you blow it, it spins around like a flower.
Right. So we would say a windmill as well?
It's like a windmill.
Yes.
It's like a windmill or on a stick.
Yes, yes.
And
so that...
using material now.
So you use that for breath control?
Yes, because it's just like the water goes through the windmill. The air from your mouth goes into the pinwheel, and it keeps it going around and around and around as long as you're blowing out on it. And once you stop, it stops.
Yes.
And so we have contests to see who can blow the longest and keep their pinwheel going the longest.
Yes.
And they really enjoy that kind of thing.
Yeah. And another thing that you often hear choir trainers talk about, Carol, is they talk about articulating consonants and things like that. Could you explain to us a little bit about this and why it's important in choir warm-up training and how you do it, Carol?
Sure. Singing involves three things. It involves the articulation of the vowels, the consonants, and a melodic pattern. So have you ever heard someone sing but you really couldn't understand their words?
Yes. Yes.
Well, it's really bad when the song is in English or a language that you speak, and you're thinking, well, I know this language, but I can't understand anything they're saying.
Yeah.
By making your vowels and consonants specific, you can make yourself easily understood when singing.
Yes.
Now, we try to get our students to pronounce vowels and consonants as an exaggerated, hyper-enunciated thing. But the reason is that words sound different when sung than when spoken. And so we overemphasize something so that they can be understood by the audience. And even though it may sound strange to us within our head, to the audience it sounds normal. As long as we overemphasize, it sounds normal to them.
Yes.
Singing depends on your vowel sounds, but with only a minor but extremely important role played by the consonants. If you've ever tried to sing a song with just the vowels, you'll see it doesn't really make any sense. But when you add the consonants, that's like adding the icing on the cake. Because then you can understand, you have beginning attacks, you have endings on the words, and it helps just form the words so that they can be understood.
Yes. So how do you teach us in a choir warm-up? What specific exercises would you do with them so that you're not actually telling them all those technical things all the time. You're just having fun.
Yes, I would do the things like just say like a letter name on some kind of a melody, like a KKKK.
Yes.
Or I forgot which ones that I've used several vowel sounds on in the ones that I wrote.
Yes.
But all you have to do is just make sure you emphasize the consonant sounds instead of the la's and the ah's and that kind of thing. Just don't do the a, I, o, u sound, but just the ones that sound even sillier.
There's a song in the book, Carol, that I wanted to ask you about, and I've been wanting to ask you about for a little while. There's a little song called The Fairy Garden, spelled F-A-A-E-R-I-E, as opposed to the usual spelling of F-A-I-R-I-E. Is there a technical reason for this, or is it just for fun? Is it just a different way of pronouncing it?
No, it's still the same pronunciation.
Yes.
That word spelled like that is the old French spelling of it, which indicated the people from the land of enchantment. In folklore, it was spelled this way just to add a little bit of character to the song, so they would think, you know, just like you did, well, why is it spelled that way? And maybe they would research it a little bit, and there they've learned about folklore and enchantment and why it was spelled that way. So instead of giving it the original fairy spelling, which could mean like Tinkerbell and Walt Disney or something like that, I wanted to paint a different picture of butterflies and unicorns and an old-time land of enchantment and castles and for the magical people. And the word spelled like this indicates a more magical being than the F-A-I-R-Y spelling or
Would you explain that to choir, to your choirs when you're working with them, or do they just pick that up as you teach it?
No, that's one thing I would tell them, because they're going to say, well, what is that word? I've never seen that word before.
And then
I might say, okay, you go home and look it up.
Yes.
If you come back and tell me what it means, I'll put a sticker on your chart.
Fantastic. So you use the incentive chart to get them questioning. Yes, fantastic. So, I think we're really covering tip number 5, which is keeping the rehearsals active and varied, Carol. And while, while I was still teaching the concepts, the technical concepts such as breathing and saying and verbalizing our consonants and things like that, what would you say would your tip number 6 be?
I would add rhythm instruments anytime I could. That means the rhythm sticks. Now, there are two different kind of rhythm sticks. There are the colored sticks that they have out now that the children really like. And then there are claves, which are they're still wooden, but they're a little bit shorter and a little bit thicker.
Yes.
And they have just a little bit nicer sound, a more professional sound.
Fantastic. So you would use
they're usually a little bit harder for the children to control.
Yes. Yes.
I use the rhythm sticks, which are a little bit longer. They're about 11 to 12 inches long, and they're different colors, and they love them.
Fantastic.
I have pictures of my kids doing the rhythm sticks, and they just love them. If we can keep them from hitting each other on the head,
And as soon as they get them, you get them doing the rhythm first, or do you get them doing the singing part first?
I let them hear the song, and then we'll pick up the sticks without the music, and we go over the rhythm. Like, I'll point to the rhythm on the wall, because I usually shine everything from my projector onto the wall so that it's really big. It's kind of like a smart board without the smart.
Right.
So then I'll point to the rhythms, or either have one of them come up and point to the rhythm.
Yes.
While they're doing the, like, quarter rest. And then we add it to the music. We add the music last, but we do it kind of a process. You know, we listen, and then we do it without it, and then we add the music.
Right.
And
fantastic.
Then we've added maracas to some Latin beats. And just the cymbals, just the smaller cymbals. And since we used to own a music store, we have some instruments left over. We have a huge gong, and they love
this
gong. It's really loud, but that's at the end of the class, if they've done well, they can each come by on their way out the door and hit the gong.
Great. They would just love
that.
It's
a great idea, but, you know, you might want to rethink that one.
Yeah.
They love it.
Yeah, it gives them something to look forward to, too, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yes.
And
what other, finger symbols and
triangles, wood blocks. They don't really care for wood blocks that much, but they're still necessary. We use bells, such as wrist bells and jingle bells and sleigh bells.
Do you have?
There's a really neat thing out that's at Music in Motion, and it's used just for rhythm instruments. It's a you can either make a transparency of it or run it off and put it on a PowerPoint presentation. But it has little squares, and each square has an instrument in it, like a drum or a stick, or and it's a very easy way to, for younger children to learn how to play with those rhythm instruments using that chart that's up on the wall. All you do is point to the picture of the instrument.
So they don't need any musical, they don't need any notation knowledge. They can just they could just play along with it very easily. Is that right?
Yeah, that's what you would use before you started the notation.
Yes. Yes.
I've used that all the time, and it works really well with you, especially. Well, adults have loved it, too. Mm. I used it with senior citizens once. And they, you know, senior citizens now are equivalent to what the children like. So whatever children like, you know that if you have a senior choir, they're going to like the same thing. So they have a blast doing stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Now, I've noticed in a couple of your songs you use coloured handbells and things like that. What? How do you use them? What? And I wanted to ask what bell plates are.
Okay, I use the coloured handbells. What I do whenever we're in a hurry for something, a lot of them, if half read music and half don't, with the coloured handbells, I'll put a black background on a PowerPoint presentation and put the letter names of the notes in the right color of the bell.
Yes.
And if they're too close together, that means they're going to be 2/8 notes. And if they're just regular spaced apart, that means they're just going to be a regular straight rhythm.
Right.
But for something like that, I'll make it extremely easy because that's something we can do in a hurry when we need something to perform. The bell plate, I don't have any of those right now, but I've seen them. And are you familiar with the choir chimes?
Choir chimes.
A long square metal with the clapper on it.
No, I haven't seen many.
Okay. But what the hand chimes are, they're like handbells, but they're square, long pieces of metal that are toned just like handbells, and they sound like handbells.
Okay.
The bells are the same kind of thing, except they're shaped differently.
Right.
They still have the handle, but they're shaped out like a triangle.
Like a triangle, are they?
Yeah, and this way they're a little bit less expensive than the hand chimes or regular handbells, but they still sound really nice whenever you're trying to teach a handbell. And it's something different to look at because they're kind of odd shaped.
Mm.
They have the white notes or just the regular white notes. They have black handles for the black notes.
Mm.
So.
Mm.
They're great beginner bells for children and adults, so.
Mm. And how about specialty instruments such as your boom whackers, your recorders, and your ukuleles, Carol? How do you implement them?
Well, if I use a recorder, I would play like a melody line, and they sing it back to me on like an ooh or a la or some other vowel sound.
Right.
So, whenever you're teaching note reading, sometimes I would offer like a 6-week course in recorder playing, and that's one of the fastest ways to teach them how to read music.
Right. So you would do a
recorder, and it also helps them with their breath control.
Ah, yes, it would too. The breathing and recorder playing really would. So you would do a 6-week course inside your choir training sessions to teach.
I might do it like I say. Okay, now for the next 6 weeks, if you come 30 minutes earlier,
yes,
we're going to learn how to play recorder.
Ah, fantastic. Okay, yes. And how about
or
you?
Boom whackers.
And do
whatever,
you,
but just add a little something special right before the choir practice.
Yeah.
When I'm using a ukulele, I might play the accompaniment to the warm-up.
Right.
If I know the chords, and they can sing the warm-up to the ukulele.
Yeah.
It's just something different.
Yes.
That's not this totally out of the ordinary that they would say, oh, that's kind of a neat sound.
Yes.
And then they might want to start a ukulele choir or learn how to play themselves.
That's right.
The boom whackers are one of the greatest inventions that I think has ever happened in the world of music.
I think so, yes.
They use them for rhythm exercises and note reading exercises. I can post it on the wall and they can read the color or the note.
Yes.
They can play, sometimes they can hear something, and this helps with their ear training because I'll say, listen to this rhythm and you play this with your boom whacker.
Yes.
And they'll copy it, they'll mimic it.
Mm.
And so that teaches them how to use their ear to hear a rhythm. And also, if something is, if they're singing a warm-up and it has a chord, since most of the things I write are very simple chords, for that reason, we can use a C chord in one group, an F chord in one, G in the other, put the chord symbols above there, while they're singing the warm-up, they can play their boom whacker in the court at the same time. It helps them hearing the chord changes.
And for those out there, Carol, who are going, but I just don't have the budget for this, what do you say to those people?
Well, I would say, first of all, you can ask for donations. You can send letters home. You can send letters to businesses. You can send letters to civic groups. One thing I did in one of the schools I was in, it was a private school. We had a very small budget, but we did have a little bit of a budget. But yep. I asked a group of parents, that would you please get together and form a committee, which is a fundraiser committee, and help us raise some funds for this music group, for this music program.
Yep.
And so they did this. They wrote the letter, sent home. They said, okay, we need this many triangles, this many boom whackers. This is how much it's going to cost. Can you donate $5 towards this?
Yes.
Or can you donate $1 towards this?
Yep. And sorry to jump around a bit there, Carol. Just in regards to instruments, like, can you make your own instruments in that sort of situation?
Yes, you can. Yep. You can make drums out of oatmeal boxes.
Yep.
You can make maracas out of spice bottles.
Mm-hmm.
You can do anything that makes a sound. I've even gone to we have a store here. I don't know if you have one there or not, but it's called a dollar store.
Yes,
everything
we have.
In it is $1.
Yes.
And they have these buckets that are plastic buckets with the rope handle that are very sturdy and very thick, different sizes. And we got some of those. And turn them over and use them as drums.
Yes.
And, you know, you have the different tones there with the drums. Mm. And it came up to be a really neat kind of an exercise. We've had a coin drive before where members bring their extra change to drop in the 5-gallon jug. And they love to hear the money drop down in the jug. And then it adds up. You know, if you drop it in there and the coins add up to about 3 or 4 inches, if it's the right kind of coin, that's almost $300. You can kind of stuff with that.
Well, I mean, again, this is another tip area that we could spend the whole time just talking on this by itself. But you know, right. I think we're covering tip number 6, which is use the rhythm instruments to create the variety and interest in choir warm-ups. How about, shall we just jump on it a little bit here, Carol, and talk about some of the other useful things you have around your room that you've got hold of that really work in your choirs? Like, you know, as the next sort of tip, what would you say it was, and what sort of stuff do you use to make it interesting for choirs in your room?
We got a hold of a very nice karaoke machine. There's a website here. It's called freecycle.com. And what it does is, on that, people give things away just because they don't want to sell it on eBay or they don't want to do anything else with it, but just give it for somebody else's use.
Mm.
A lady had a karaoke machine that she was wanting to give to an organization, and I emailed her back and said, we could really use this for our children because they're learning to sing, and I want them to learn how to use their microphone properly and how to sing with accompaniment tracks. And we wanted them to learn how to sing independently, and so we got a hold of the karaoke machine and let the kids sing into it. And they love it because they get to use the microphone. And they also like to have the karaoke contest once in a while where they can sing anything they want to with the karaoke machine and look at the words and sing into the microphone and hear themselves.
And how often would you use that, would you say?
As soon as we get through with working on something, like if we're working on a specific musical, it might take 6 to 8 weeks to learn that. As in one of the classes that we have, that's a break between the whatever we're starting, just got through with, and starting next. Excuse me.
No, it's okay.
I'll do it right in between there, just as kind of a break.
Yes.
And then if we have any kind of social, like a party or anything like that, and they want to bring out the karaoke machine, we can do that. We don't mind doing that.
Yes. And how about things like puppets and things like that?
We have all kinds of puppets. We have people puppets. We have the smaller ones. We also have the big ones, which the adults do. But we have the smaller people puppets, and we have animal puppets, and the their most favorite one is the fuzzy bird puppet that you can get on eBay. Mm. And it's as big as, you know, you put your hand in it, it comes all the way down to your elbow. Mm. And inside the beak squeaks. And they love to do rhythm exercises with that. And right now we're doing Rockin' Robin with that.
Yes. Oh, and, fantastic.
Anytime they do the tweets, they have to, you know, tweet the bird's beak. And then they sing the song and do little motions with him during the musical interlude.
And it seems so obvious now that you say it, but it's a perfect song for it, isn't it?
Oh, it is. And I love the colors because they come in the neon orange and red and yellow and lime green and blue. So they love the birds because they can get in there and squeak them, and they love to pick out their own colors. Sometimes they talk to the birds, too. It's really exciting.
It is. It's a great way of looking at it. Look, as your next tip, Carol, we've talked a lot about rehearsals at the moment, but how do you go about making some of your performances fun, too? How do you make it fun visually and auditory for the audiences watching?
Well, if the audience is looking, the first thing that you really need to have is some kind of scenery. Now you can take your projector and project it on the back wall and have instant scenery without having to spend a lot of money on 3D scenery. But you can make your own, anything that's going to make the stage itself just something a little bit more visual. It doesn't have to be fancy, just anything. Whenever you're doing a song, right before you do a song, you can add a little poem right before. If you're doing something at church, you can add a scripture. You can do let the children or the adults even hold an acrostic, like if you're going to do joy, you know, they can hold a J, an O, and a Y. You can make your own scenery that way. Putting the letters on there and putting glitter on it. You can put words on cards.
And have you ever to set up a piece of music to make it so that you're sort of framing what the music is going to be before the audience hears it? Do you use things like skits and a little bit of humor?
Oh, always.
Yes.
We did a skit on joy, and we had a song that was about the joy. Yeah. And so when we did the skit on joy, each person had one line about what joy is, and they were kind of like talking to each other. After everyone said their line and they sang the song, they did the bouncing ball routine with it, which I've got the joy, they're bouncing up and down, down in my heart, and then they throw it up in the air and hold it to each other.
Yes.
We walk towards the center and put the balls in the center and then walk back. It was a really pretty thing.
So it sounds like, is it almost like a choir warm-up that becomes part of a performance in some ways?
Yes, it can be.
Yes.
Because they've already learned that. They learned how to do it. But then it looks so nice, you think, well, why can't we do a performance with that?
Yeah, and performing.
And then another time we did a song, The Happiness Is, in which we got a big, huge box and wrapped it up like a present. And then when we lifted the lid, helium balloons floated out of it. And
wow.
Every time something was mentioned that was happiness, that object was brought out of the box, like, happiness was telling the time, so we brought out a cloth.
Ah, fantastic.
This was ice cream. We made a cardboard ice cream cone. Yeah. Loved by you, a heart. Happiness is playing the drum, bring out a toy drum. Walking hand in hand, a mom and daughter walked across the stage.
Wow.
Hand in hand.
And how about all the preparation for that? Do you do that inside choir rehearsals, or do you do that out of hours?
So it depends on what it is.
Yes.
Sometimes they require extra rehearsals, and sometimes you can say, okay, when we sing this, you walk across the stage holding your daughter's hand. That's all you have to do.
Yes.
That way it's instant, something to look at.
Yes.
And you don't have to put any extra time into it.
Yep. And visually, you use masks and hats and costumes?
Yes. The novelty companies have these wonderful little masks. They're foam masks, and they're usually animals and different things like that. They only cover the eyes, but they form fit to the head. And your nose is free and your mouth is free. And they have the most beautiful colors, and they're so well made. And they're only like $5 for a dozen.
Wow.
And when I ordered them a few weeks ago and got them in, I said, you've got to be kidding. These can't be $5 for 12.
So where do you get those from, Carol? Do you get them from places like Oriental Trading again?
I got these from, I think I ordered these off eBay. But Oriental Trading had them. But they were the shipping was a little bit less expensive off eBay for the same thing.
Yes, yeah.
I have to really watch Oriental Trading and the novelty companies because they charge so much for shipping. Sometimes on eBay you can get an even better deal because the shipping might be $2 or $3 instead of $8 or $10.
Mm. Oh, that's a good piece of advice, I think, because you can get very caught out with shipping sometimes, can't you?
Yeah.
Yes, and we've touched on costumes already. We talked about the pirate costume, how you can dress up a blue pair of jeans on and a white T-shirt on a very small budget, and then you can make a pirate costume out of that. We talked about how you can add the cardboard hat and the, what would you put, a red sash and...
A red bandana, yeah.
Yep, yep. And what other sort of costumes do you make out of a very basic start?
Well, for like if we were doing something with Romans and hearts, you can use things for costumes for little children that are very simple, like a pillowcase.
Yes.
All you have to get whatever color pillowcase you want, or a trash bag, cut out the neck, cut out some arms, you have an instant body for a costume. So then, if you're doing something like the Roman singers, you can order one of the gold leaf headbands and a gold sash, and all of a sudden you have a harp player. If you want a construction worker, you can get the construction hats. You get a dozen of those for $5 or $6 off of from the novelty company. Add a construction paper tool belt with cutout tools. All of a sudden, you have a construction worker. If you want a Hawaiian or the grass skirt and an inflatable ukulele,
yes, fantastic.
Novelty companies, and you can just wear this a different bright colored shirt. With a pair of shorts or your jeans, whatever you want to do. For Christmas, you know, you can dress them in red and green or pastels for spring, or you can dress them in the color of your country if you want something patriotic.
Yes. Yep.
Warrior songs. We made the neatest little cardboard hats for a Roman soldier that had the, I don't know what that thing is called, that goes across the top of your head. It was red and fluffy. But we made the hats and the breastplates covered in with aluminum foil.
Yeah.
Very effective. And they're still standing today, believe it or not.
Fantastic.
Our crowning glory was the year that we made, for the little children, we made sheep shirts because we couldn't find anything that was not expensive. So we took regular white baby T-shirts and covered them with cotton balls.
How gorgeous. They sound beautiful.
Oh, they were beautiful. I have pictures of that too.
Yes,
but the little children kept picking the cotton off. So
yeah,
we decided not to do that again. That took a lot of time.
Oh, I bet it did. It sounds like a very time consuming thing.
Yeah, and you can dress them up in the 1950s if you do the like American 1950s and the poodle skirt and the rolled up jeans, or you can do the beach just by adding a beach ball and a towel. That's all you really need. And flip-flops or a rock band. My favorite one was the rock band when we did the metallic tinsel wigs and the inflatable guitars and their tie-dye T-shirts. So it's just so simple to dress them up without having them have to spend a lot of money.
Yeah.
I know that now that some of the dance recitals that they have here, some of their costumes are $150 and $200 a piece.
Wow.
And, you know, the children that are in school normally can't afford that kind of thing.
No, so yes.
You have to be creative and keep everybody in mind so that nobody's left out.
Fantastic, yeah. Just a very quick one here, Carol. Tip number 9, using the right equipment. Look, let's just have a little rundown of some of the things that you have in your choir set up to use every rehearsal, every performance with your choirs that you use all the time.
You must have a very good stereo system that has the dual speaker balance for the split track accompaniment
CD. So are you talking about the kind that you can change the balance on it and you'll hear you'll hear the rhythm part, if you like, and then you'll hear the melody part?
Either that or you have the accompaniment on one side and the voices on the other.
Ah, yes. Okay.
Or, you know, you can either for either one. But unfortunately, they don't make those much up here anymore.
No. Yes,
there's one company that does it, and they know that they've got the lead on it, and so they charge $300 for the stereo. But you can also just get a regular stereo system that has the external speakers and unhook it from the back. That takes a little bit of trouble, you know, just
yes.
It's not the button, but it can be done.
Yes.
And but you've got to have the split track somewhere. You can find them if you look real hard and are willing to pay the money. But you know, people can't always do that.
If people had a MIDI player, would that be usable?
Yes. Yeah. No problem with that.
Yep. And what, just a quick rundown of some of the other things that you have that you wouldn't be without.
Okay. Overhead projector or a digital projector. We just now purchased a new digital projector for the wall.
Fantastic.
Put the lyrics on the screen. Mm-hmm. Make the words and the exercise is huge. Mm-hmm. You can allow the students to point to them. You can put the rhythm exercises up there. You can post your photos and graphics and the keynote presentations on the wall at the choir sings.
Mm-hmm.
It's always good to have a TV with your videos and CDs that you're going to want to use. It's good to have a tape recorder to tape the rehearsals.
Yes.
Or you can video the rehearsals, show them back. And what I always do with my private students is when they're practicing a song, I would go ahead and record it then and play it back, because sometimes you can always see something that was going on that you didn't notice before.
Yes.
Say, oh, I didn't see that. I didn't, even as a teacher, because the teacher's usually playing the piano.
Yes.
Even for groups, the teacher is usually playing, and you don't notice something that might be happening, but when you play it back on the video, you can see it and correct it.
So
make sure you always have your camera, your video camera, and your picture camera, plenty of CDs and tapes and video racks and plastic storage bins. That they can see through, so they can see what you've got in there.
So you're looking for the see-through kind?
Yes.
Okay.
A locking file cabinet is very important for your records and for your personal things.
Yes.
So you have plenty of shelves. And another great invention for storing puppets is the metal shoe racks that attach to the back of the doors.
See, just these things I would never have thought of. Yes, that's right. Perfect. You can hang things from them.
Oh, they are. I have a whole wall of nothing but bird puppets, and it's beautiful. It's a beautiful wall.
Lovely, yes.
And you put the people puppets on there and the animal puppets, and they can see it.
Yeah.
And the good thing about that is you can either hang it over the back of the door, or you can take the hangers off and mount it high up on the wall, so that if you don't want the puppets played with, you know, when you're not around, and get one of the handicapped kind of grabbers and reach up there and just grab them down with the grabber, and they like that just as well.
Okay, last tip about budget. You know, we touched on this before, Carol, but just really quickly, how can we get access to money if we have none?
Okay, first thing, you ask for donations, send letters home, have a coin drive. They love the coins.
Yes.
Do a class fundraiser, have a car wash, a bake sale, a hot dog sale. The best thing that we've done is when we have the talent shows. Because we make up the tickets, which makes it seem very important. We sell the tickets for $5 a piece and have the parents or the choir members bring finger foods and snacks. And that way you don't really have any money going out. It's all pure profit because they're donating the food and you're selling the tickets. So
yes.
The talent shows really seem to work well.
So you find that they work best for you?
Yes.
Yes.
Businesses are sometimes willing to donate, and you can always make your own things. You can make your own instruments. There's all kinds of things you can do to save money, but still make it exciting for the children or the adults or seniors or whoever you're working with.
Carol, any final comments or final words on the whole topic of making choir warm-ups or rehearsals fun that could be useful to all the choir trainers out there?
Yeah, I have two things. My favorite thing is there's an old Chinese proverb that says, tell me and I'll forget, show me and I may remember, but involve me and I'll understand.
Yeah.
So what I've always wanted my students to do was to understand what they were doing and why they were doing it, why they're singing it, and, you know, we want them to be involved in the music. So that's the main thing, is what I like to always keep handy, just to remember. Always involve them in what they're doing so they'll understand what they're doing.
And I was amazed when you said that, because it's one of my favorite quotes, that one too. And it's just so needed for music education, isn't it?
It really is. It's really needed for all education, as a matter of fact, because, you know, students learn a lot by sitting in the classroom with a book, and that's great. They learn a lot by demonstrating. But when they can actually get out there and do it, that becomes a part of them for the rest of their lives, and they'll never forget it. And the last thing is, just like what I was talking about with Eva and her recipes, always add something to your recipe. It doesn't matter what it is. Just even one ingredient can make the change of a lifetime in something or somebody.
Yes.
So all you have to do is just add something to the recipe.
Just something different to the recipe, is it?
That's all you have to do.
Yeah. And thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you. This is a wonderful opportunity, and I really do appreciate it very much.
And I've really enjoyed finding out your secrets, really, Carol. It's been fantastic. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much.
So I hope you've enjoyed these thoughts from Carol Troutman Wiggins today on making choir warm-ups fun. If you would like to know more about our collection of choir warm-ups available, which feature many of Carol's ideas, you can just follow the link below if you're listening to this on the website. Or you can go to thefunmusicco.com/choir warm-ups and you'll get it. It's a collection of great ideas which come not only from Carol, but from lots of other experienced choir trainers around the world. So, like I always say at the end of my emails, and this is really reflected in Carol's enthusiasm for teaching today, teach with passion.